Thanks for listening to the Replatform podcast, sponsored by Crown Peak and Elastic Path and hosted by me, James Gerd. A warm welcome if it's your first time. I hope you enjoy it. Look, we've put a lot of time and effort into bringing interesting guests and really cool content to you, all free of charge. Help us keep it that way. Refer us to other people in your network. Let them know we exist. Share our posts on LinkedIn and Twitter. And also, the best thing you can do is rate the show on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever else you listen. It really helps boost visibility. So thanks. And let me set up our new episode, and then I'll introduce our guest. So we're talking about BigCommerce platform strategy and product roadmap update today. Product development is an area that I find really interesting around the e-commerce vendor landscape. SaaS is a world of constant feature updates as well. It's an exciting space. And this week, we're focusing on one of my favorite vendors, and we're joined by a leading voice from their strategy team. And we're going to cover things like general product strategy and focus, key capabilities around like international B2B, and some of the new evolutions like into generative AI. So a warm welcome to Aaron Sheehan, who's the Director of Competitive Strategy. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing well. Nice to see you again, James. It's been a bit.
It has indeed. So before I start asking you lots of questions about the business and the product, do you want to give people a flavor for what you do? And like, for those who haven't worked with BigCommerce, where does BigCommerce sit in the e-commerce market at the moment?
So two very easy questions, right? So I guess I'll take the first one that you asked, which is what is it that I do here? And I haven't quite figured that out myself, which is my usual go-to answer, but I keep showing up and I keep getting paid, which is fortunate. But I'm the Director of Competitive Strategy, which means that my main job is to, one, learn about other platforms and how they are competitively stacking up to BigCommerce, to understand how we position ourselves and how we should learn and evolve and grow to take sort of the best of what other platforms are doing, or also to understand what we should maybe avoid doing in certain cases. That's just as important. And also to, you know, help communicate out our product strategy and vision or fit for the market to the outside world. So that includes, dare I say, influencers like yourself, as well as thought leaders, analysts like Forrester and Gartner and IDC and folks like that. And consultants who operate in the commerce space. So I get around a fair bit.
Excellent. And for those who might not have worked with BigCommerce before, even though you know it's a very well-known platform globally, where do you see it sitting? So I think this is probably a really nice way to open all our questions. Is the vendor space is constantly changing. You've various things like the Gartner quadrants, the Forrester waves. You've got lots of other platforms that don't sit on there and different ways that people define themselves as whether it's composable, headless, SaaS, et cetera. So could you talk people through like where does BC sit and how do you position yourselves in the market? And what are you seeing as the key changes over the past few years in terms of like that vendor space?
There's a lot wrapped into that. I'll try to be sort of as concise as possible. So for background, I come from the Magento SI world. So prior to coming to BigCommerce early last year, I'd spent eight-ish years doing Magento implementations, some Shopify, some BigCommerce. And then on my last stop, I was at a Salesforce partner as well, and then got to see some of the Salesforce Commerce Cloud world. I've spent a decent amount of time surveying the field in what I would call the sort of the mid-market, right? The classic kind of like mid-market of e-commerce, which is that, you know, more or less that $5 to $10 million in online GMV up to $500 million, $1 billion GMV, right? I'm transacted online and watched the space. When I got into it, it was still Magento One. We were still doing it that way. It had not been acquired by Adobe. You know, it was the eBay days. And so where we fit is in that mid market pretty squarely, right? BigCommerce historically started off as an SMB platform out of Australia called Interspire, came over to the US many years ago and started moving up market, changed its name, rebranded. And has been growing and evolving the platform ever since, mostly organically. There have been a couple of sort of app acquisitions along the way, the Feedonomics acquisition. But generally speaking, most of what we've done has been what we built ourselves and what our partners have built. BigCommerce has very much taken a page from the old Magento playbook of being very partner first in how it approaches e-commerce. I would say we approach e-commerce with some degree of humility and openness are sort of philosophically things that are important to BC, meaning that we don't presume to have all of the answers about every business model and how every business model should leverage technology to grow and operate more efficiently. We certainly have thoughts and opinions, and we're certainly trying to build solutions, lots of solutions that can be leveraged by partners and developers at merchants and brands to grow in the way that we want to grow. But and obviously we're multi-tenant SaaS, so that's a big distinction from where Magento had been fitting in that space. So none of the constant sort of upgrades and patches and security updates that sort of go along with having an on-premise open source model, but really trying to offer a very similar level of flexibility to our customers in terms of what they could do. So we make very few demands, I suppose, of how our platform gets consumed and used by the builders, the developers and engineers who are building on top of our platform. Where we sit in terms of sort of the analyst kind of rankings is we're pretty squarely in that sort of like challenger-ish, strong performer kind of wave quadrant space. So alongside a lot of other vendors as well. Every analyst has their own sort of methodology and agenda, to be totally honest, in terms of whether they are validating market decisions that have already been made. Am I crowning the king that's already won the battle? Or are they trying to influence maybe and steer the technical buying decisions of their customers? Different analysts approach that differently. And where we rank, you know, depends on the analysts that we're speaking of. So I don't want to get too far into the weeds because the answers are different.
Yeah. I know this is the bit I love about the industry is I've been in lots of meetings where you go, right, this is the chart. And you go, what about this chart? And you're like, oh. So I think the key distinction that I've always liked for people is how much do you want to own and change? How much you really need to be able to change in terms of like code levels versus what does flexibility really and agility really mean? And I think we're going to tease out some of that in this podcast, which is why I wanted to have the update with you guys, because a lot's been happening with BigCommerce over the last few years. So let's start then on the markets that you are most targeting, because as you say, it's impossible for any platform to be a perfect fit for every single business model industry. I mean, it's just like you'd never get through the R&D. So with that context, what industries and verticals are BigCommerce most focused on at the moment?
That's a tough question. So we are from a market shares, or not market share, but from a percentage of our customer base, obviously retail is the massive one, right? We have more retail customers than any other single vertical, right, amongst how we're used. That means fashion and apparel, home and garden, outdoor, health, pharmaceuticals, and healthcare. It's a pretty wide spread of retail. We do have quite a lot of B2B customers. B2B is a big component of our overall customer base, especially when you survey our larger customers. And I think that's because, as I've done a lot of B2B, I've been on the digital juggler side of things for a long time. That's your consulting firm. And you know, I'm sure that every B2B business looks different from the next B2B business, even people in very adjacent sort of sectors, because they've grown organically over time. And they tend to sort of accrete business processes and practices that are a result of an organizational structure and not sort of a forethought tech strategy. And where BigCommerce, I think, is very attractive to a lot of B2Bs is that we sit alongside existing tech like ERPs and things like that, and we're very flexible in how we're implemented in our partner network. And I think this probably gets underrated by the analysts and people a lot, but can't overstate how important partner network is, because we have so many ex-Magento, ex-Salesforce partners who work with BigCommerce, who are used to those sort of thorny B2B digital transformation projects, that they already know how to use tech in a digital transformation process, where that can be more challenging for a partner network that kind of hasn't really done rolled up their sleeves and done the very messy work of bringing a B2B online. So, you know, in terms of like where we are in terms of our customer base, very heavy retail, very heavy B2B. And then it gets very long tail, I would say, after that. And
yeah,
when I say B2B, I mean both manufacturing and distribution, because we have a pretty equal mix.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's what I wanted to tease out for people listening. It is you know, there are certain platforms that purely target like B2C, and that is it. And BigCommerce has definitely established itself from that open SaaS kind of position as the leader from a B2B point of view with like bundle B2B with the quotation. So let's drill into the B2B a bit more, because I know you've also now got like accreditation program for partners specific for B2B capability. Just seen a few people posting on LinkedIn that they've now achieved that, like 5874 in the UK. What I'd love to know is, can you tease out for people, listen, what are some of the key changes that you've made for B2B merchants? So things like better integration between the different portals, any new capabilities. So that, you know, in the last, like, say, 12 or so months, just a few of the highlights would be really interesting.
Attract, your complete product discovery growth engine. Create relevant shopping experiences that convert into sales and grow online revenue with personalized search, merchandising, and recommendation solutions powered by AI. Find out more at attract.com.
Yeah, I think probably the biggest highlight recently was our new buyer portal for B2B, which is a React app, basically, that is meant to be a much easier to use simplification of what a buyer would see once they've authenticated into the front end of the site in terms of representing order history, the ability to quickly reorder, the ability to see invoices, not just the orders, but actual, like, you know, account balance, right? Because in B2B, most of your purchasing is often happening via a PO sequence and a line of credit, right? So it's not necessarily I'm just whipping out my credit card and paying for, you know, several pallets of something at one time. Because one of the things that we have heard so much is the value proposition of an e-commerce platform in a B2B context is often only 50% of the transaction, sometimes less than that if you're doing a sort of a phased implementation over time. The other 50% is a user-friendly view into some god-awful ancient ERP system that's probably a green screen, right, that requires like someone to be shuffling coal into a boiler to make it work, right? Those systems are sort of famously not user-friendly, and very few of them have like a consumer-facing web portal for a buyer to actually interact with. And so there's this very lossy, noisy, intermediary state between a buyer, a customer of mine with an account, who has to call someone on the phone, who then has to go in, put some coal in the boiler to get the ERP to surface some numbers. And so we really are focused on not only the transactional piece, but being able to surface data from whatever the ERP is. And we have connectors, and our partners have a number of connectors. But there are certain sort of common pieces of information that every buyer wants to see. When is my shipment going to be here? How much open invoice do I have? How much credit do I have? What are the last three things I ordered? Can I reorder that? I want to reorder the last order I placed with you, but I want to change some quantities because footfall has changed or demand has changed or whatever. Those are the kinds of use cases that we built our portal for. And it's very much easy to sort of drop into whatever kind of theme front end you want to use. So that's a big one. You'll see more along those lines from us in the near future around invoicing. Other big advancements on our side, headless support for B2B and multi-storefront support for B2B, for our B2B edition product. So we're seeing a lot more uptake and interest in headless implementations of B2B sites, especially in your neck of the woods in Europe. And I'm sorry, in Britain and in Europe, I realize I have to make the distinction now.
don't, I'll stop weeping.
Yes. That's a different podcast we could have.
Hey.
On that topic. But we have seen a lot of interest in headless implementations where the user experience, look and feel of the front end of the site is decoupled or running on a different stack than sort of the back end business logic. And so we've built full support for that in terms of GraphQL APIs and support for our multi-storefront architecture so that you can have distinct B2B and B2C storefronts on BigCommerce with one common backend and data and point of integration into like an ERP or an OMS, but with different representations maybe of that catalog with different customers.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I mean, I've definitely seen sharper focus amongst B2B customers in terms of that overall user experience and not just seeing it as we've got a portal and that's it and that will do. So the ability to actually better control that front end properly and manage the user journey and get custom buying journeys for the different way that people shop, I think is really interesting. Yeah, I also really like the simplicity of the quotation piece because that's something that more businesses are looking at and realizing, well, actually, I don't have a CRM. I'm customizing an ERP to handle this how I want to with customers is bloody expensive and you wouldn't really want to do it. So yeah, it's definitely, I definitely urge people who are interested in it to look at it because the quotation, the end-to-end piece of the request for quotes, the communication and the updating and the visibility of it on the front end was really quite neat. So I think that was a big win. And you touched on,
yeah.
Sorry.
Well, I was going to add, I'll say anecdotally, I've had many, many conversations with merchants and brands who also have an ERP that is quite old and they are reluctant to invest more money customizing it because in the back of their mind, they're thinking, I would really like to get rid of this thing and move to something a bit more modern. And so there's people who don't want to, and they don't want to find themselves in a sunk cost fallacy 5 years later, realizing that, well, I guess we have to stay on this awful thing because now we've built a totally custom front end on top of it. They want to decouple as much as they can to de-risk the technology strategy.
Yeah, and you touched on the next area that I'm really interested in probing on a bit further, which is multi-storefront. I know that was big news. There's a lot of interest last year. Initially, when it launched, it wasn't fully matured because, you know, you obviously have to build out the full functionality. So I'd love to look now about, so a couple of things that were always of interest is how many stores are supported in one instance? Like, you know, how many locales can you get? How many languages can you have per store? So if we do that bit first, and then let's talk about the DCs and the stock files and how you can connect different stock files into a single store. So, yeah, so let's talk about the stores and languages in MSF.
Sure. And yeah, so we released our MSF, our multi-storefront functionality, early last year. And that was the ability to have multiple product catalog storefront, basically multiple storefronts, right, on one instance of BC. But critically, they all resolved to a single sort of checkout experience in terms of the payments and shipping and tax settings and things like that. So it was quite handy for a kind of a multi-brand approach where ultimately the business decisions about the transaction itself were all identical, right, between them. But I needed to have different branded storefronts or different domains with different product catalogs, right? What we now have, what is in beta and will be released fully later this year, I think we had a press release go out last month on this topic, is the sort of the fully baked, I would say, Magento or Silk or Demandware-like version of that, which is the ability to override all of the fields on the products into different localized or regional strings effectively, and the ability to fully control the checkout in terms of I can have different shipping payments tax, per locale effectively, and a different language and base currency on each one, meaning that for each storefront, I can set a different base currency for it, and then I can settle in that base currency directly. I don't have to sort of like roll back to a master storefront and pay the FX fees, twice effectively. So it's sort of the fully baked version of multi-storefront. That is initially going to be one language per storefront is my understanding. And then early next year, you'll see us support multiple languages on a single storefront for those kinds of like locales and regions that are, you know, multiple languages inside of one polity or one sort of tax jurisdiction, depending on how you're sort of structuring your storefront setup. But yeah, very exciting. I'm quite looking forward to it. I think it's going to be quite a game changer for Europe and other parts of the world where cross-border and cross-region trade is a fact of life, more so than it is here in the States.
And I know you said about one language initially, then expanding. In terms of, if somebody moves to MSF, How many stores can they have in one single instance of MSF? Is there, because there was a limit, I can't remember how many it was when it first launched, but is there still a cap, or can you have as many expansion stores as you like?
There was a limit when it first released. We usually, when we release new functionality, we set a fairly conservative limit on things as we try to figure out how then it scales with adoption. I know the limits have been increased, and I also know the limits are dependent on whether or not your front ends are headless or using our native Stencil theming. But it's double digits. I don't know how far, though. That would be a good question, maybe for a follow up. I know it's double digits, but I couldn't tell you off the top of my head how many.
Fair enough. No, well, that's useful to know, because I think it was definitely capped initially in the single digits, from what I remember. So that's useful.
It was 5 or 6 when it first launched. It's definitely larger than it was.
Yeah. And I do like, I mean, it's sensible, isn't it? You want to test and prove that it scales, that you don't release it out to a massive client and goes through the pain. Okay, excellent. And how about the bit that always becomes more challenging is multiple DCs and stock files. And so I've got a client, for example, that wants to do MSF and initially one store, but then wants to have 3 or 4 global stores. They got different stock files, and they want to be able to choose which locale gets which stock file, which initially I know you couldn't do. Is that now actually okay, so people can choose where how they connect at locale level?
Yeah, so we released earlier this year a multi-location inventory support so that you can have stock housed across different locations. It's often sort of used in sort of a retail click and collect, you know, context. We have merchants, you know, using it to transact live. You know, what we don't have yet is any kind of like WMS functionality in terms of order routing, where we're going in and we're deciding which location to fulfill from. It's on our roadmap, but candidly, what we've found is that we're pretty primarily selling to sort of, you know, mid-market enterprise merchants. Almost all of them have a WMS or ERP that's making those decisions for them. That's also plugged into things like a point of sale and plugged into things like maybe some of their other channel sales. And so the e-commerce system is not really the system of record for which DC a particular product comes from. They've already got something more robust that's plugged into their stack. And so it was interesting when we started the conversation, it was a much requested thing. But once we got into the details with actual merchants, but we don't need BigCommerce to do that. We just need BigCommerce to make sure that the customer has the right experience in terms of like where they're fulfilling from. Is it available in this location and not this location? And the ability to make sure I don't get oversold in a particular, yeah, you know, particular DC. So that's all generally available.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah, it's a hard one, because to really do true order management orchestration is incredibly complex, because there are so many permutations for how you decide what gets routed based on the item, the size, the weight, the destination, the combination. That's a big operation. I guess, you know, one of the beauties of BigCommerce with its open APIs is you can connect with specialist order management systems that are already out there that are designed for e-commerce if you don't have it within your ERP. I can never remember that. I always get the names wrong. Commerce.
And many of the incumbents out there, the Manhattans of the world, and I mean, you know, there's people doing all sorts of cool stuff. A lot of custom logic sitting on top of an SQL database.
Yeah, well, that's often the way. Or I think anything that automates stuff where people aren't using a spreadsheet and then determining where they stick things is a bonus. But so let's move on to the next question I got, which is, you do a lot of work, I know that as a business, do a lot of work about making the platform more performant from a developer point of view, giving them better tooling so that they can develop quicker, faster, smarter, etc. And I know there was a start last year to open up more APIs, for example, for GraphQL, of other things about like improving API coverage. Can you just talk us through that area from a developer point of view? What's happening around the APIs, the openness of the platform?
Yeah, quite a bit. So we've for our enterprise plan types, which is the majority at this point of our revenue customer base, we don't have any API limits, right? We haven't, we still don't. We've had full, very robust REST API coverage for a very long time in terms of the key functionality of an e-commerce platform. So managing inventory and products and customers, all the rest of it. GraphQL was a very early, we were sort of early adopters of GraphQL, and we now have sort of the last bit in, I believe it's beta, but it's in the late stages of beta. It's our cart and checkout GraphQL coverage. And that's sort of the last bit because in headless contexts, often what we've found is that merchants want to have a sort of a full headless storefront. They're using a sort of DXP or a CMS and maybe a custom front end to represent the storefront, but they don't actually want to build a checkout from scratch. And so you'll have a lot of like, well, the storefront, the homepage, the PDP, PLP, the customer journey, the sort of knowledge base or FAQ pages are all sitting on something else. But we would like to use the checkout that BigCommerce already has built, right? Facilitate the checkout because you guys have already handled, we've already handled the tax and the interdependencies between promotions and tax and shipping and all the payment method integrations and stuff. But, you know, headless is growing, right? And the amount of complexity that people want to embrace, I think, in terms of building a custom checkout experience has also grown. And so we now have our cart and checkout GraphQL APIs to support that. Our checkout has always been open source. You can go down to GitHub and download it. And if you want to host it, there's an SDK out there as well. If you want to go build your own, that's always been there. But this is a way to sort of do that using GraphQL in a headless context without having the overhead of having to host your own custom checkout. So again, we've always been, the tagline of BC has been for a long time, open SaaS, open, you know, instead of open source. It's sort of a portmanteau. This is sort of the latest iteration of that sort of philosophically for us, which is like, do whatever you want to with it. So we have full coverage now of the entire platform from an API perspective.
Cool.
Very important to us because we have so many developers and engineers who we consider to be our customers in a lot of ways, and that's who we spend a lot of time building for them.
Yeah, it's interesting because more and more in the last 12 to 18 months with the projects I've worked on, I'm getting questions from people about what's the data connectivity, how open are APIs, how extensive are they? I go back before that, then most people were just not thinking about that part. They were thinking about the trading front end piece. More people now looking at what could they achieve with a small front end team that's being recruited. They're not looking to see the full stack stuff, but they want to be able to take more control and do more within the platform and have less dependency for everything on an SI partner, for example. So use the SI partner for the value add big projects, but do more in-house. So yeah, it's interesting. I've been following those developments. I think it's there's a lot of really good stuff been happening in that space. Leads me on to the next.
Yeah. There's a bit of a tape delay. I was going to add, you just brought up an interesting aside that I wanted to call out, which is that we have a lot of customers who get started with us on using our Stencil storefront and the sort of the native checkout, the native everything, right? Because BigCommerce does work out of the box, right? You can just sort of like set up an account and go, right? You don't have to do a headless build, right? That's a bit of a distinction between us and like a Commerce Tools or a Spryker or something like that. But what we then find is a lot of businesses in the interest of going to market quickly, I need to replace a legacy platform that's being sunset, or I need to get off of Magento, or I need to get off of Yahoo Stores or something god awful like that. And I need to get up fast. But as their business digitally matures and they start to, maybe they make those hires, they have those partners in place, they mature into wanting to have more control. You sort of mentioned that. You can stay on BigCommerce and you can simply turn individual pages and storefronts and slowly progress over time. And so you can, because we're composably built, but we don't force all that composability on you up front at the start. We are having a lot of customers now who are hitting a point where they're ready to build that checkout. They're ready to customize that, or they're ready to put that DXP in place, but they don't have to replatform. They can simply, and they don't even have to ask our permission, right? They can simply go and do that without having to migrate all their data and go through a new procurement process and all that stuff.
Yeah, and I think that's nice because I've been having another conversation with a client of mine about the phasing of if you do decide as a business to go headless, because it means you have to take on more engineering yourself. Obviously, you've got the front end piece that's not themes now. The ability to do that on one storefront, on the smallest one, as the POC and get it live and not hit the rest of your stack and hit don't touch the 95% of your revenue, touch the 5%, and then get a mature process set up, an operating process, and then start to roll it out. I think it's such a massive benefit to have that flexibility.
Yes, yes. And not have to sort of play mother may I with your vendor and renegotiate terms and things like that. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, exactly. A question that somebody else asked me and said, can you ask this if you'll speak to BigCommerce, is around Page Builder. Because I know that, you know, Shopify's been really pushing in that area. Page Builder's grown in BigCommerce as well. It's really good visual editing, drag and drop. But there's a couple of things which obviously pure CMSs do really, really well, which are things like scheduled publishing. Is there anything in or come in around that ability to accurately schedule publishing for different times, different days in different markets, or even for people to be able to like create an edit, submit it to be approved by somebody else who can then schedule the publishing? Love to hear a little bit about that.
Great question. All I can say is that we are in our roadmap planning process right now for 2024, and that is an item that is up for discussion at the moment. And I really can't say too much more than that.
But
there are also other commitments we are making to our front end stack in terms of what's available. And I can't say much more about that either, but watch this space. There will be more coming soon.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it, because the position is listed company. You can't commit to stuff that isn't committed. So all I would say is all those agencies out there who know their clients want it, that's when you just start saying to all of your BigCommerce contacts, we really like this. This would be a great feature to help us push BigCommerce further.
You can schedule promotions inside of BigCommerce, if not the content piece yet. So you can decide from a couponing or sort of what would be sort of catalog price rule in Magento. You can schedule those to be a particular point in time.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And this is why these sessions, I think, are so useful for people listening, because you can't have everything in your roadmap, because there are so many different demands and you've got to do on what's got the biggest weighted benefit to the community, to the business, etc. So I think it's nice for people to know that it's there, it's on the roadmap, but it's not there this year, but to keep an eye open for it. The other one, because I realized, I mean, it's great. We've been chatting, the time's flown by, because I love product update information. One last one I actually want to come to is the recent announcement around like cloud-driven AI capabilities. And this is, I mean, everyone's gone obsessed with AI in the industry generally, and especially commentators. It's almost like AI never existed before 2023, which is slightly strange. But from a platform point of view, I think it's really interesting how vendors like BigCommerce are picking up and turning it into features that are useful for merchants. And one of the ones you got is like AI-generated product descriptions. Can you talk people through what the generative AI piece is? Like, where are you focused?
Well, so we just did a press release, I believe earlier this week or maybe last week, where we're partnering with Google Cloud on this, exactly leveraging their Vertex AI. Obviously, BigCommerce is hosted on Google Cloud platform, so this is an obvious partnership for us. But yeah, it will. So, and I do want to call attention. You just alluded to it. AI's been in e-commerce for a long time. Vendors like Klaviyo and Algolia, other search spring people, right, in the search and merch context quite often. So that that's a machine learning optimizing, you know, for product description or a product discovery, right, and search and merchandising. What we're looking at now is both using generative AI to do product description generation. There's already half a dozen vendors. There's people in our app store already who have already built apps. You know, partners have already built apps and are surfacing it as well. And so you can also see that in kind of a chatbot context. You know, there's been people touting AI powered sort of chatbots for quite some time. That's also not new. What you're seeing is, I think you're seeing a level of maturity and functionality in there where it's getting harder to tell the difference between interacting with an AI and interacting with a person. In terms of what we're doing, there's a few areas where we're focused on AI powered writing features. So simplifying the process that, you know, to get text into a field and onto a page, right, using AI. There's also, we're also going to be using Google Cloud's recommendations AI to have a product recommendation, an AI-powered product recommendation solution, right? Using Google's data and Google's AI engine for that. And then integrating AI into our analytics suite, right? So we already have an integration with BigQuery. We have our own analytics dashboard and analytics reports. And I'm quite interested in using AI to help surface insights out of that. Because quite often, when it comes to BI and analytics reporting, a lot of merchants will invest in tooling to sort of generate those reports and then have a very hard time getting actionable intelligence out of them. And that's something where I think AI can actually help quite a bit. So all of that is coming to our platform.
Yeah, I think this is a key thing, is amongst all the hype and noise, there are some really practical use cases where generative AI can add value to take away like the non-exciting tasks that people have to do, repeat and rinse. And the product description one is a classic one. I mean, so when people have big catalogs, there are so many long tail products that never get optimized, and it's just very static, simple text and left on a page, and they'll never get the focus by the experts, simply because the volumes go into the mean hour, we'll do something that's going to have more impact. So I think that's really important. And I've done tests even on some of the low cost market tools out there, like Copy AI, of just generating stuff quickly as a test and see what impact. So having it in the platform, I think it's great, especially in the SME space. I think that's going to be massively valuable.
I agree with that, and I'll say that I've seen some of the competitive offerings around that, and I see a certain amount of like AI, basically AI. There's a little bit of marketing out there on AI will just run my store for me, right? AI will decide what categories to promote based on seasonality. AI will be able to tell me why are sales down. AI will be able to develop an entire campaign for me, write the content, create the coupon code. I'm a bit skeptical of that, because I believe generally brands and merchants know how to do those things already. And in fact, their competence and expertise about their own business and their own market is going to be in excess of whatever a generalized AI engine is going to be able to supply, because there's a lot more inputs that go into a go-to-market strategy for a brand than simply optimizing some data points from a database. Who knows? I may be a fuddy-duddy. I may be surprised by this, but I think, especially for any sort of mature brand that's been doing it for a while, I think that the people actually know how to sell and how to make money and how to serve their customers.
Yeah.
What I see AI is doing is helping to scale that process and making certain things easier than they were before. It's an assistant, right? It's not there to drive the business. And so I'm a little worried there are going to be some disappointed people, maybe. Who think that all they have to do is insert some quarters and then the god robot will make the money, but we'll see.
I feel like we've got a Terminator meme that needs to spread rounds now around this. Basically, like, what will happen if you leave your website only to AI? It's like a bleak, nihilistic future for the world. But I agree with you. I think AI shouldn't be underestimated, but it needs to be understood in context. And launching anything without measuring it and controlling it is not sensible. That's brought me to the end of the questions. We could go on for ages, I know, but I think those are the core areas I wanted to chat through. It's been really interesting. So look, and thanks so much for coming on and taking the time to give your perspective from the inside world of big commerce around where you're headed at. If anybody's got any questions or they're really interested in any of these things and want to find out more, how do they reach out? Who should they reach out to?
Well, you can always find me. I'm active on Twitter and LinkedIn, so just Aaron Sheehan. Pretty easy to find. I got in early on that land grab, the handlement land grab. Also, aaron.sheehan@bigcommerce.com if you want to email me. More broadly speaking, if you're interested in getting a demo and learning more about the product itself, go to bigcommerce.com. There are plenty of calls to action on different pages of the website. You can get in touch with a solutions consultant, sales engineers, who can show you how to spin up a demo site and start building and talk to us about what our functionality is.
Amazing. Thanks. Anyone out there who does want to know more, just reach out. BigCommerce is really lovely and open, and they're very happy to chat. And thanks for listening. Keep an ear open for our next episode. We drop them every week. And don't forget, before you leave, to give us that rating on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever else you might be listening and watching. Thanks, everybody. Take care, and until next week. For more information on this topic, head over to replatform.fm for our audio podcasts. To discuss a project, or if you'd like to chat about any of the topics covered in this episode in more detail, please reach out to myself, James Gerd, or my co-host, Paul Rogers, via LinkedIn and Twitter. Thanks again for listening, and keep your ears peeled for the next episode.